I went around the room and I asked everybody, how many transactions do you believe you can do a month? Do you believe you can do a month? And I got 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 5, 7, 3, 1, 2. No matter if I handed them it on a golden platter, a silver platter, they weren't going to get any more business because they didn't believe it.
Yeah.
And I believe, and I was told as a young child, anything you want, you can do. And I also believe that anything you want, wants you back. And that is like a rule of the universe. It's a rule of frequency, of attracting, of raising yourself up. Everybody wants to talk about all the negative stuff that's going on, this and that. I don't care. And I don't say that like I don't care. I really just can't put my head in it. Because if my head's in that, my head ain't in this.
So what if I told you that a realtor took 192 listings last year in this market? You'd want to pay attention, right? Philadelphia real estate powerhouse Maria Quattrone is on the podcast with me today. And this conversation is going to go way deeper than just real estate. We're going to talk about why most agents are chasing the wrong business. Why loan officers sometimes get the relationships all wrong, the approach to relationships. So loan officers, you're going to want to listen up. And the real reason so many people stay stuck, and spoiler alert, it's not because of the market. Maria is going to share how she built a listing-driven business, why she's launching her new More Listings Now community, and why the people who are winning are the ones who stop chasing transactions and start becoming the solution. Welcome to Lending Leadership. I'm Rach, and this is Maria. Maria, thanks so much for being on with me.
It's great to be here with you, Rachel. I'm so excited to talk with you today. Thanks for having me.
Me too. And you know, it's so funny. I was doing my homework and I found out that we have very similar starts. I found out that you were a radio girl too, selling ad space. Me too. Worst job ever. It was Clear Channel and now it's iHeartRadio in Philly. So I think when you left is when I started, because it was about 2004. Worst job ever. But I feel like when you cut your teeth in that kind of an environment, you're fearless. So I get you. I get you so much more now. I'm like, all right.
Yeah, that was the...
So tell me about that start.
How did it start in radio?
Yeah. How'd you get into that? You just fell into it?
Oh, yes. Fell into it. I was in college and my professor at the time was the class I took was radio, TV. Well, I was in the radio, TV and film. I took a class about advertising sales and he worked at Power 99. He was a sales manager, then general manager of the radio station. And I thought, wow, look at this guy. He comes in with this black leather trench coat. He's got his briefcase. He's got a cell phone. It's like 1992. And he drives a Mercedes. And I was like, oh, that's so okay. So I could do this. I could sell advertising. And so I did my internship at KYW TV in Philadelphia. At the time was an NBC affiliate at Fifth and Market. And that internship was in the spring, January to May of 2003. And then I applied for this position. Originally, I applied to get into Philadelphia radio straight away from college. But at that time, they told me I applied at 104.5, star 104.5. And they told me, basically, go pan sand, go get some experience and come back. So I applied for this position that I found out through my internship at WMGM TV 40 in Atlantic City. And in May, 5 days after college graduation, I started my job. And when I went for the interview in March, the first interview was like a cattle call. They had 72 people showed up.
Oh my gosh.
They hired two of us, and I was one of those people. And so here I am. It's May 2003. I am 22 years old, and I'm like, okay, what am I supposed to do now? And they're like, well, here's a notepad, here's the yellow pages, a pen, a phone, and some business cards. And they're like, go at it. I'm like, go at it. They're like, yeah, call people. Yes, find out who the decision maker is on advertising and get appointments. And I'm like, okay. Well, that didn't go too well for the first 3 months. I hated it. I wanted to quit so many times. I would be outside crying. I'd be hiding in the bathroom, crying. I'd be driving home, crying, driving there, crying. Like, terrible. It was terrible. And then one day, my boss said to me, okay, here's what we're going to do. You're going to go out door to door and walk into the businesses and find out who handles the advertising and meet somebody there. And so that's what I did. And I built my confidence and I kept going and kept meeting with people and come back to the office and make more calls. Now I have the people's information. So I have like a little bit of a leg up. And then I would set the appointment. And then I would say, okay, you know, I can show you how to be famous on TV and how to make more money in your business, whatever. And I said to my boss, I said, is there any reason why we are not selling more than 4 weeks at a time? And he's like, no. And I'm like, can we like make a package or something? So we made three packages. 13 weeks, 26 weeks, 52 weeks. And that is how I had them pick one of the three. And that is how I rolled. And 16 months later, I was the top second person in at the TV station. And then I called the people up at Star 104.5. They made me, I actually had to call like 10 times to get the meeting because they wouldn't respond to me. And I did, only because I didn't give up. And then I worked there, and I worked in that business until February of 2004, even though I entered into real estate in March of 2004. I worked in February 2005.
I love that. I mean, I feel like if you were timid, you know, then to be successful, you got to have grit. So you probably you had to get over that real fast. And just, you know, you don't become that kind of a success in any kind of sales position by being passive. You know, you got to pound the pavement. You got to, however many times you need to call, right? Like you don't take no for an answer. And I can see the writing on the wall now, you know, having that kind of a start, even though you hated it, even though I hated it. I mean, I think anybody who gets into any kind of sales position like that where they're like, here's a phone book. I mean, I don't even know if they have phone books anymore, but here's a phone book, figure it out. And you're like, okay. But you have that kind of start. It makes sense. It makes sense now why you're not afraid to pick up the phone when so many people in sales will do whatever they can to not pick up the phone. It's like
100%.
You got to get in there and just do it.
And the only way to have a closing is to have had a conversation. The only way to have a conversation is to pick up the darn phone.
Yeah, funny how that works. So fast forward, you know, some years later, you've been in the real estate industry now for almost 30 years, I guess.
Yeah, you could 23 years.
23 years. And last year alone, when you told me 192 listings, I mean, that's huge. So take me on a little journey of how you kind of focus, because I don't think that listings were always your focus, were they, from the beginning?
From 2000, and I wanted to get listings from within a year in the business. I wanted to get more listings. I wanted to know how to get more listings from the moment I entered. And in 2006, I started to call expired listings. Listings that failed to sell the first or second time around. And so I focused on that and building my brand from having a lot of signs on the street. And I would sell properties in areas that were just starting to gentrify. So I would get a lot of investor and developer business as well. And my brand started to grow like pretty quickly because I had all these signs up, because I had all these listings, because I called them, because they expired.
That's so smart. That's so smart. And I'm sure some people, you know, probably were like, oh man, I should have done that. But the shoulda and the actually doing it. I know it's scary. I know it's scary to pick up that phone and to have that door slammed in your face. But, you know, in order to get to the yes, you got to have a number of no's.
In order to be successful in whether it's mortgages, real estate, title, insurance, or anything, you have to do the reps and you have to fail forward. There is absolutely no path to success without failing along the way, because every no gets you closer to a yes. And it's up to you to decide and get good enough where those no's become less frequent and you're getting more yeses, because you can speak intelligently to people and be able to convert the call to an appointment to a listing to a closing. So it's all a matter of, you know, the average probably needs about 20 conversations to get book a listing appointment. I would say a newer agent and then an agent in the business for, you know, pretty good experience, probably 10 to 12 conversations to get an appointment. My average is about 4.5 conversations to get an appointment. So we'll say 5. It's like 4.8. So we say 5. That's a big difference. That means that I don't need to talk to as many people to book appointments.
Why is that?
Skill.
Questions. Skill. Do you ask the same questions over and over again?
100%. You have to know your dialogue. You have to know how to speak with people. You have to sound like a human. This is not a scripted thing, but you just, like if you go to the doctor's office, they have a list of questions they're going to ask, and they ask every single patient the same questions because they need to know that they can help you. They need this information. It's the same thing. I do the same. I'm diagnosing you. I'm diagnosing the listing. I'm diagnosing the situation. And if I don't have the answers to these questions, I cannot really help the person.
Yeah, I like that analogy. That's a great analogy. Was it always like that in your business? I mean, or is that something that kind of evolved over time?
It evolved over time, but it's probably been like that for about 15 years.
So what are you seeing from, let's start from the realtor point of view, because obviously that's where you are. What do you think is getting people stuck, you know, in any market? I mean, obviously the last few years have been tough, but here you are having some of your best years ever. What is it? Is there a common thread that people kind of get stuck in?
I think that there is a non-understanding of really what it takes right now. And it takes more than it did a year ago. And it takes more than it did 2 years ago and more than 3 years ago. And this is not an order taking business. This is a business based on relationships and developing your skill and your expertise over time. So, and when you do that and you're working on it constantly, your business compounds. So I didn't go from 50 listings to 192. I look back at my tracking for over 3 years. So in 2023, it was 130. In 2024, it was 160. And in 2025, 192. The pipeline, I have people in my pipeline already for next year that are going to list with me. And probably people in 2028. So if I just follow the process is, what do you need to do daily to move the business forward, even when it's invisible? Because right now, a lot of the work is invisible. We're not getting the calls we should expect to get in the spring market. If this is what you want to call a spring market, in my opinion, it's a terrible spring market. You're not getting the callbacks. People cannot make a decision. There's a lot of uncertainty in the world. And along with the geopolitical climate, the cost of things, there's a lot going on. And people right now, there's the most credit card debt that the history of our country.
Yeah.
Well, people don't have money. And the rates were supposed to come down and they didn't. But here's the thing. There always will be sellers and there always will be buyers, regardless of market condition. And think of them as like they're floating in the sky. And some of them are like higher up because they're not yet ready. And the ones that are like around you in this orbit, you just want to grab them. And speed to lead, speed to opportunity is critical. Because if you don't pick up that phone or somebody in your office doesn't pick up that phone, they're calling the next person. I know it. We've experienced it, even though we answer the phone. We could be three or four people could be on the phone at the same time and it'll go to voicemail. We only have so many lines. So, but generally, you know, 99% of the time we're answering the phone. Yeah, but if you're on a listing appointment, you have to have systems and things set up so that you can, if somebody does call, you can make sure that you connect with them as soon as possible.
Yeah, that's huge. I mean, that's something we talk about, you know, obviously on our side of the business, on the loan officer side of the business, and on the podcast a lot. I mean, if you don't have a system set up, then it's not duplicatable. It's not scalable. So that system is huge. I want to go back to something that you said just in general with, you know, it takes more. And I think that's across the board in any industry. But what are you seeing from your clients? Are you seeing more people who are coming in green, or are you seeing more people who have maybe Googled and gone through AI and think they know what they're doing? Or maybe they are very savvy. Like which kind of client are you seeing most often?
I mean, most of them aren't that savvy.
Are not that savvy.
No, not with selling their house. Maybe they know more about buying a house, but not necessarily selling, because there's lots of things that they would never know about. They have no idea. And just because they own a home and they bought it 30 years ago, they definitely have no idea.
Yeah, 30 years ago versus now, it's a little different, a little bit of a different game.
It's the world changed.
Yeah.
The world changed. And so I'm not saying that they're not smart people. I mean, they are. That's not what I'm saying. But I have a lot of clients also that are older and maybe they're empty nesting or they're selling off their portfolio and they're not necessarily online all day long. They just want me to tell them what we have to do to get this sold.
Yeah,
as the expert. And if I'm working with expired listings, then in that case, I'm diagnosing what the problem was with the listing. And I usually can figure it out before I even have the first call with them by doing my thorough diagnostic process that I go through. But I usually have a pretty good idea. And it's not always just price. There's other factors. And sometimes they don't even know that this thing was a factor in it not selling. Hmm. Like, for example, if you don't have a lockbox on your house, that's a huge red flag. And it didn't sell. That's a huge red flag. Like, that causes a lot of times a house not to sell.
That's interesting. I mean, that wouldn't even cross my mind that you wouldn't have a lockbox.
Well, sometimes people don't. And it is a reason why the house couldn't sell. Because you can't, if you miss an appointment as a seller, that appointment could have been the buyer.
Yeah.
And your window's gone. They already bought something else.
Yeah.
And I've experienced it myself years ago when I used to run buyers. And They would come into town for the weekend. They would see maybe like 8 or 10 houses. And if I couldn't get into a couple of them, that's it. They're not coming back. They bought. They already put, and it's happened multiple times. And that one house actually could have been a good house for them. But they saw this other house and they never got to see that house. So they bought the house that they got to see.
Yeah. You can't buy a house you can't get into.
No, but there's so many things people just, you would never know. You wouldn't know being in the mortgage side of it. You would have no idea. There's nuances that that come into play. And I don't think that most real estate people even know. The attention to detail is extreme when being a listing broker. And most agents are not listing agents. They focus on the buy side. See, we decided years ago not to focus on the buy side, not to buy buyer leads, because if you have listings, you get buyers organically from the listing.
Yeah, that's a natural progression.
Why not build your brand instead of building Zillow or Realtor.com's brand?
Yeah, talk to me more about that. I mean, you've done a really great job. You've had a podcast now. Be the Solution, right, is the name of the podcast?
Yes.
For 6 years, which is awesome. You do a great job of getting yourself out there. But for somebody who's maybe just starting out, I think we throw around that term identity and branding quite a lot. I mean, what would you say to somebody who maybe is either just getting into the game or has been in for a couple of years and knows they need to kind of evolve and make a change and do more. What does that look like?
It really depends on what they're doing right now. I mean, are you having the conversations that you need to have daily? And if you're new and you don't have a pipeline of business and you don't have 5 pendings or more, you should be talking to 20 conversations a day. A minimum though, I grew up in this industry with the number 20. 20 conversations a day.
Magic number 20.
The minimum is 10. And you'd be surprised at how many people do not talk to 10 people a day. And then I ask, well, what are you doing all day? Because emailing people, doing marketing flyers, none of it matters. None of it matters. The only thing to get you a closing is have a conversation. And the only way to get conversations besides emailing, texting, and picking up the phone and sending a video text.
I love the video text. I'm a big fan of that. I feel like just texting is fine. I feel like it's kind of the easy way out. But if somebody can see you and hear you and they know your tone, they get you right away. I mean, the video text is branding right away because now people know you. They know your nuances. They know how you move and talk. And I think that's huge. Do you see a lot of people doing that? I'm always pushing, especially our loan officers. I'm like, you guys got to get on more video. You have to do it.
Not enough people. And people will not usually just delete the video text. They're not deleting a talking head in front of them. They're usually going to respond to you in one way, shape, or form. So video texts are great, especially if you're trying to make more contacts and you're not getting people on the phone. I would highly suggest it.
Yeah.
It's a great way to have a personal connection with somebody. You know, even just like, hey, I'm looking forward to seeing you on Friday. I'm committed to being there at 2:00. I'll see you then.
Yeah.
He has a confirmation. You know, and it's the words we use, right? I'm not confirming the appointment. I said committed. I'm committed to seeing you Friday at 2 p.m. So it's all the words that we use. It's not leaving any open loops. So when you have an appointment, you have to schedule the next appointment, the next call, the next showing, the next whatever it is, and future pace the client for what to expect next. You know, I did 192 listings in 25. It wasn't by accident. I did a challenge for myself in the month of March, 100 listing appointments booked in a month. And the most I did that I have documented, I only could do the things I have documented. The other, I don't know. It might have been more, but I only have documented. I look back over 3 years, and 42 appointments was it seemed to be the most. And I had several months with 42. So I said, okay. I asked my husband, I'm like, what do you think for the challenge? What do you think I should do? He's like, 100. I said, I was thinking too. I was thinking 100. He's like, yes. And I'm like, oh my God, I'm so scared. Like, if you search my video library, you would probably find the video about it. Like, what did I do? I told the world. I told Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn. I did a video about it. Every day I would do a video or a post about it. I locked in. You know what? And why I did this is I wanted to see what was possible. It was an experiment. Like, who does this? Who creates experiments for themselves? I did.
I love that, though.
I created an experiment. I wanted to see how short we are all selling ourselves.
Yeah.
Because what's the industry standard? It definitely ain't 100 appointments in a month.
No.
And I did it. Not only did I do that, what I did is people say, well, how'd you do it? I said, well, first of all, the most expensive real estate you own is between here and here, between your ears. Mm-hmm. And it's all your mindset. And what you believe to be true will be true. And if you believe you can't do it, you've already lost. You're not going to do it. I believed I could do it. In fact, I was making sure it was going to get done. I know if I, for every hour I call, I can book an appointment, generally. So I booked 100 hours in my schedule in the month of March to get 100 appointments. But what happened was, by end of week 3, I had 100. And what I would do is every day I'm at the office and I write on my whiteboard the appointment, the time, the date, when it is. Because not only did I have to book the appointments, I actually had to do them.
I was just going to say, I mean, booking them is one thing. Now you got to show up and actually.
Well, and a lot of them, lot of them were on the phone. Some were in person. But I had to do this appointment and I had to do the comps. Like, I had to do everything. And it was really a hot mess because I was doing all this pretty much on my own. I had a little bit of help, but I didn't have the help I really needed. Anyway, by the end of the challenge, I hit 132 appointments.
In 1 month?
In 1 month.
In March, 132 appointments.
That's correct. Documented.
That's amazing. You know, something that you mentioned when we were talking last week, it's like, well, how many do you, and you kind of just hit on this a little bit, but like, how many do you think you can do? And I don't know. People say 7, 10, they pick a random number. And then you work towards that number and then stop. But I mean, 132 appointments, the sky is the limit. Like, I love that you pushed yourself to see probably what you were physically capable of doing. How could you, time-wise, we're all given the same 24 hours a day. What are you going to do with them? But I love that you pushed yourself to do this. So is there anything, Maria, that surprised you that you learned about yourself in general by doing this challenge?
Well, I want to go back for a minute and touch on something that you said. So you said, well, how many could you do? And you said a number, just put out there, 7.
Yeah.
That's the identity piece of it. So we will only do what our identity believes that we can do. And I did this experiment about 15 years ago. I had an ISA department that was making calls in my office and they were handing agents appointments and the agents weren't going on the appointments or were like ghosting the people or didn't call them. It was crazy. And I was pissed. So we're in a sales meeting. I had like maybe a dozen agents that were on my team at the time or something like that, maybe 10, 12. I went around the room and I asked everybody, how many transactions do you believe you can do a month? Do you believe you can do a month? And I got 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 5, 7, 3, 1, 2. No matter if I handed them it on a golden platter, a silver platter, they weren't going to get any more business because they didn't believe it.
Yeah.
And I believe, and I was told as a young child, anything you want, you can do. And I also believe that anything you want, wants you back. And that is like a rule of the universe. It's a rule of frequency, of attracting, of raising yourself up. Everybody wants to talk about all the negative stuff that's going on, this and that. I don't care. And I don't say that like I don't care. I really just can't put my head in it. Because if my head's in that, my head ain't in this.
Yeah. Yeah, it's so true. It's so true. And
I would say being uncomfortable is critical to growth.
Yeah.
You have to be uncomfortable. You have to say, who is the person that I need to become to have the life that I want? And what do I need to be rid of?
Yeah.
It's not about real estate. It's not about mortgages. It's not about title. It's not about any of it. It's about who is the person that you need to become to have the life you want.
Well, and I think a lot of people just don't know how to answer that. So if you don't know where you're going, then any road's going to get you there. And it might not be the road that you want to go down.
So in one of my master classes, I do identity work. And the identity that agents or mortgage people or anyone in sales, they operate under. Oh, I'm fine enough is an identity. I don't want to be salesy is an identity.
Mm-hmm.
Right. There's all these different identities and you have to unpack which one you are and you got to work to get out of that identity. I've been a listing agent for over two decades. I had to work past that identity to move into my new identity of running, being the founder of my program, More Listings Now, a listing agent, a operating system. That didn't happen. There was no accident in it. Everything I have done over the last 23 years, but specifically over the last several years, is documented. There's systems, there's things. Why was I doing it?
Yeah.
I was a project, my own project. And each time that, you know, one of the things that's really important about the 100 listing challenge, it wasn't about the 100 listing challenge. It was about the person I became while doing it. And
yeah, right.
If you say you're going to do something and you don't do it, you didn't keep your commitment to yourself, to your family, it eats away at your integrity. And when it eats away at your integrity, you don't trust yourself. You don't trust yourself. So you're not going to trust somebody else either because you can't even trust yourself to do what you said you're going to do.
Yeah.
And when that happens, you're not going to succeed. So keeping commitments is critical for growth, whatever that commitment is. And people want to let themselves off the hook too much, too easily. I said, did you make your 20 conversations today? No. I'm like, I don't know. When I was doing this appointment, I worked until I had enough, until I got to whatever time I need to be. I did another challenge another time with 100 dials a day. That was crazy because I had so much work come from it. I couldn't keep up with myself. I couldn't make that many calls because there's a time sensitive in it. It's not like I could book them like a week later. I booked the appointments as soon as possible. So the next day.
Yeah.
So I only can handle so much at the same time.
So then you're working towards making your 100 calls, but then actually showing up to these 100 or whatever bookings that many. You need.
Correct.
Yeah.
So 100 that's dials a day for me is too many. It usually to get to about 20-ish conversations, it usually takes me between 50 and 60 dials.
You know what I love too? I remember what I was going to say. In this challenge, and I think this is a lesson for anybody in anything that you're doing, let people know around you when you have a goal like this. People want to be a part of your story. They want you to succeed. And if they can have a piece of your success in a way to say like, oh yeah, like she's going to do it. She wants to book 100 appointments. Like I'm going to help her get there. I feel like that is a shared experience and people are rooting for you in your own story. Yes. And I love that you shared that with people. Cause I think sometimes people forget, like, share your goal with the world. And it's a good thing. It's a good thing. It's a great icebreaker. It's a great piece of connection. I don't know. I think, well, if you don't have a goal, that's the first problem. But find a goal, get a goal, and then share it with people. They want to see you win. People.
They do want to see you win. And don't think that you can't do this because X, Y, Z. Mm-hmm. No. If somebody before you did it, you take their borrowed belief. You're borrowing the belief. You're borrowing it. Maria did it. I can do it.
Okay, so we officially had to split this episode into two shows because Maria was just dropping way too much value. But in next week for part two, we're going to go deeper into identity, authenticity, all the things we love to talk about, what's really holding salespeople back. This is a big key, and actually what realtors think of loan officers who call for coffee appointments. Make sure you tune in next week to Lending Leadership. See you then.